What kind of reading material, newspapers, do you get inside the house of detention?
Well, just about all the reading material. Just another thing, just about nothing is banned except gun magazines. And of course, something if you that dealt specifically with creating any type of technology that would be used in terms of waging any type of violent struggle, you know.
What about radio, television?
Well, just about, you can get just about anything on that. This is the county jail. Upstate is much different.
Which prison are you going to be transferred to upstate?
Comstock. That's approximately 300, 400 miles out of New York.
What are the conditions like up there? You said they were worse than in the county jail.
Comstock is too strong. Comstock is a maximum security institution. At this present time, they're diminishing the population. I think the population now is only about 900, 1,000. The majority, you can't go anywhere in the institution. Before I left, before they implemented their new program, and this has got to be placed in context also. This is in conjunction with the RX program, in terms of it serves to feed off, siphon off certain revolutionary and militant elements within the population. But anyway, they started a new program, a work program, because Comstock was at one time 70% idle. In other words, 70% of the inmates in Comstock had no jobs and were doing nothing but laying up in their cells. There's no caste system in Comstock, so therefore everywhere you go, you have to go with the police. You have to walk in companies. The institution is very small. It consists of mainly a 16-hour lock-in. And this type of institution it is. It has no industrial program, no modern industrial program. The schooling is inadequate. In fact, I was in Comstock 10, 11 years ago. And it hasn't changed, except that they put up more gates, electronic eyes and cameras, and more security. That's about it.
This sounds a lot like Folsom out here. Is there any prison that's near New York City?
Well, this prison is near New York. It's Sing Sing, and they're closing that there. That's too old, you dig it. After Sing Sing, I believe Greenhaven, Walk Hill, and Napanee. Now, Greenhaven is the most popular prison, and it's the largest prison in the state, and it's the most liberal in its program. It's a maximum security institution, though. I guess the thing that it could be compared with, only reasonably compared with, that way would be, maybe San Quentin, maybe. I think Dannemora is closer to San Quentin, you know.
Does the BLA relate very closely to prisoners in New York City?
I guess what I guess what can be considered, quite a few of them so-called members of the BLA are in jail, so I guess they would relate.
Because people out here in prison say that the BLA has given them more support than the Panther Party out here. I'm wondering what kind of, you know, actual physical support comes from those who are still out on the streets.
You know, it's very difficult for any underground apparatus to give any mass-type support, but there are mass groups here who recognize the necessity in supporting prisoners of war. And this is something I would like to emphasize. People in the movement in general, in the Black Liberation Struggle in particular, find it very easy to support the liberation struggles of people thousands of miles away who are in a shooting match, in a shooting war with U.S. imperialism and Portuguese imperialism. But these same brothers and sisters find it very difficult to begin to support themselves, to begin to support captured comrades here who are opening up a guerrilla front here in the United States, who understand the dynamics of revolutionary violence and its importance and its positive aspects. This is very bad. Another thing is that the bourgeoisie left, black and white, understand basically about repression, but they don't understand the tactical and strategic implications of supporting prisoners of war, brothers who are labeled and who are tried for acts that to them appear desperate, to acts that to them appear violent that the masses can't accept. If the masses of people cannot understand why a brother like Michel McGee receives his freedom, if the masses of people cannot understand why it's necessary to open up the armed front why it's necessary to their very survival in the future to have this, to have armed formations and armed apparatus capable of taking offensive action. If they cannot understand it, it's because the movement and activists in the movement cannot understand the necessity of this. I would criticize various national organizations that claim to represent political prisoners because they have not taken up the banner of brothers who are prisoners of war. It's very important that people understand the tactical necessity in supporting POWs and the necessity and the role it would play in a united front in the future, a national united front for the liberation of black people and all oppressed people here in the United States, you see.
But didn't you say there was a danger in people start organizing around individuals and going for the freedom of individuals?
The danger in that lied in this. I have to put this in context, all right? When the Black Panther Party started out, it started out as a defense mechanism in the black community to oppose the racist Gestapo-like tactics of the police in the black community. In the course of its evolution, in the course of evolving its ideas and understanding of what our situation was, it developed into a revolutionary organization. But the contradiction lied here. The contradiction lied that the party at one time was called upon to participate in mass struggle and yet try to claim to be a revolutionary vanguard waging armed struggle. You can't ride two horses at the same time. A mass organization means an organization that is open, not only open to the masses, but relates dynamically to the masses on a mass level. With the capture of brothers trying to defend the people in the black community, it necessitated we wage legal struggle. In other words, that we wage struggle in the courtrooms. Now, waging struggle in the courtrooms is waging struggle on the enemy's terms. It's waging struggle in his arena, using his laws. So therefore, it requires a certain type of struggle. It's very difficult for one to come out and say, yeah, he's a revolutionary, he relates to the armed overthrow or the eventual revolutionary overthrow of the existing government and expect the jury to acquit him for actions that the pigs are saying are towards that end. So therefore, it required that we take a defensive position in the court, that we were defending ourselves. This was our right to defend ourselves. This was tactically correct. It was tactically correct. But in doing this, a contradiction was created. The contradiction was between our ideology being revolutionary and our tactics, which was being reformist and mass-oriented towards our survival. You see? So that type of activity, trying to free brothers at that point in time, as a mass organization, was cool. That meant that we had to formulate structures on the underground level that did not relate to that. You see what I'm saying? That there had to be two simultaneous activities going on at the same time. That it was necessary. The dynamics of objective conditions required two lines of action, at least from that particular area. Now we're in a situation where brothers are being captured, and they're no longer being captured for merely being members of an organization. They are captured for waging concrete struggle against the power structure on an armed level. This is qualitatively different. This makes their defense next to impossible in the courtroom where the laws are determined by the ruling class.
How do you feel about the way Rochelle McGee deals with courtroom struggle?
I think Rochelle is a very brilliant brother in terms of dealing with some fascists out there in their court. I'm quite sure Rochelle harbors no illusions about what the outcome of this case will be. It's just that tactically he understands that he's in a situation where he has to fight with the tools that are available to him. He has to fight now at this particular point through the legal system within that framework. But yet and still, if we really check out Rochelle, we see that his ideas and his beauty transcends that legal system, because he's not fighting in it in order to show its validity, in order to show that it works. He's fighting in it as a tactical necessity. So any victories that he gets out of that would be tactical victories for the overall movement. It would not be victories that would vindicate the system.
From the information sources you have, what is your overall impression of the struggle in the California prisons?
Hey, man, you got some good brothers over there. From various information I've been getting, the brothers have, I would say, developed a better organizational approach to dealing with the enemy on the level that that is called for at this particular point. This is an approach that we have yet to get together in the jails, mainly because it's only recently that a lot of brothers who are on that level started getting busted. So now, in a few months, we'll be up there with them. But I think that the struggle in the jails in California is a very high level. I think it's setting the trend, that George set the trend and style of struggle on an overall level.
What about the support the prisoners out here have been getting?
Well, from what I understand, the support the brothers have been getting out there has been very bad. That the people don't understand the tactical necessity, as I said before, of supporting our brothers in jail, of supporting prisoners of war, of supporting brothers who have taken revolutionary actions. And the reason why they don't understand is because those activists who were supposed to explain it to them don't understand. I don't think Rochelle got the type of support that he deserved. I don't think Rochelle got the type of support that his situation tactically called for. I think that if Rochelle would have got that support, that he stood a very good likelihood of beating that case. Not because the pigs or the law allowed him to beat it, but because that type of support would have influenced the jury to the point where they could have understood how correct the historical representation that Rochelle is trying to get over is, namely that he's a slave and anything a slave does for his freedom is justified.
How was the support in your trials?
Well, I didn't have any support as such in my trial. There was no support. The movement here, in that respect, was very disarrayed, mainly because the case was something that a lot of them were scared to touch, and that those who did want to touch it, you understand, were isolated by events, were isolated by past historical events, and a lack of a concrete grasp on what was tactically necessary in mobilizing people at this time, how people have to be mobilized in order to raise their consciousness level so that they could support cases like mine. So it was a tactical victory for the end.
Where did you get the name Daruba?
Interesting question. I got that upstate about 12 years ago. When I first went to jail, I was about 18, 17, and I got down brothers up there. At that time in New York, what was happening was African nationalism. And a lot of us were aware and studying our African roots, were studying our history as black people here in the United States, and were beginning to evolve methods of struggle with the enemy based on that. I was hooked up with brothers who related very heavily to African nationalism and black nationalism. These comrades gave me my name. It means storm.
Have you tried to stay in contact with people out here in California?
Yeah, but it seems like there seems to be something happening out there where everyone's arms are broke, you know. People don't seem to write. But I understand that it's very difficult for people out there on the outside to sit down and write brothers and sisters who are inside and trying to keep them up to date. I know how that is, you know. I've been trying to stay in touch, and I've been in touch with certain people out there who from time to time have been telling me what's happening. And occasionally people from out there come back this way, and therefore we're able to get a comprehensive rundown of what's happening out there. But communications with the West Coast has been very bad, and we should understand that the enemy thrives on this. As long as there can be no coordination of activities, as long as there can be no concrete communications, and therefore, anything such as a national united front is impossible.
Now, you will be sentenced on Wednesday?
Yeah, that's in Queens.
And what is the likelihood of your sentence? What will be your entire prison term putting together both trials, both sentences?
Well, that case there is 3 years. We've been promised 3 years, and I've been down 2 already. So that time is geared to run, or is supposed to run concurrently with the time I already have. In other words, I'm going to get credit for all the time I've done up until now on that, and that the time will run with what I already have. As it stands now, I have 25 life. I'm doing 7 now, 25 to life, supposed to start 7 years from now. But that's what I got for the conviction in Manhattan.
Do they have indeterminate sentences in New York?
Yeah, from that you mean zero to a certain time, right?
Say one to life and the parole set by an adult authority or something like that.
No, not quite. It's almost the same thing. Here, like, I have 25 to life, which means I'm eligible for parole about 19, 20 years or some shit like that, you know? They do have indeterminate sentences, like zero to seven. Like, I'm doing seven now, zero to seven. And when you go upstate, you see the parole board in 10 months, and they set your minimum, how much time you're supposed to do minimum. But they have what they call mandatory parole up here, or CR, conditional release. And this is usually two-thirds of your sentence. So, like, in 7 years, if I have a seven-year sentence, I would do something like 5 years and some change. And I'm supposed to have mandatory parole if I don't lose no good time.
Do you think you have much chance for a successful appeal on the first case?
Well, if I was any place but in New York State, I probably would be. But me and these pigs, we don't get along too tough in New York. You know, they don't dig me at all. And I can understand that. But as far as appeal is concerned, as far as their legal machinery, as far as the law is concerned, I should be reversed in the first department. But that's unlikely. I would probably have to lay 3, 4, 5 years before I can get reversed. But there's thousands and thousands of legal reversible errors in my trial, behind it being a railroad in such a fascist fashion. To give an indication, there was a corollary, a case that was relating to mine, of a sister that was arrested here, and she refused to testify in the grand jury, and they kept her in jail for a year. She's out now. And she was appealing this, and is still appealing it. And when it got into the Court of Appeals, when it got into the first department here in New York, the judge took one look at it and said, well, isn't this related to the Moore case? And they said, yeah, this is related to the Moore case. And he said, well, I'm not even going to hear this. I'm not even going to deal with this. And they just threw it. They just denied it without comment.
Well, that happens here. I don't think you'd have much chance in California either. Where could people get in touch with you? Do you have any idea what your address will be?
Yeah, that's in Comstock, Great Meadows Correctional Facility, Comstock, New York.
Great.
You'll find that Comstock is the main industry in the whole area. So I think you could even get there without a zip code and a box number. It's box 51, I believe. I'm not sure. I believe it's box 51. They move me around so tough, I don't really have an opportunity to get the addresses of these various institutions, you know. That's right, they use numbers up there. I forgot about that, you know. They number everything. My number is supposed to be 30,125.
Do you have any, like, final statement to make now, or anything you want to say?
Especially addressed to those who claim to want to wage struggle against the enemy of all progressive third world people, against all progressive white people, against the working class in general. That's mainly that, yeah, there were some recent events out there where a mayor was elected in L.A., a black mayor, am I right?
Right.
And there was a black female mayor elected in Compton, if I'm not mistaken. And the bourgeoisie reformers, especially the black bourgeoisie, try to set this up as an example of how this is the solution, how this is the road to the liberation of all people in this country. And that's a farce, as far as electoral politics is concerned. Electoral politics should be always kept in proper perspective. It's a method, and it's a front, and it's a level of struggle. But the level of struggle is geared towards preparing us for other levels of struggle. And that so-called activists shouldn't view, especially black people in general, shouldn't view the election of a black mayor in L.A. as being so decisive. The fact that the majority of white people elected a black mayor illustrates the predicament of the white working class and how they would move or try to move in any direction that can liberate them from this madness that's being perpetrated on them by the American ruling class, by the white racist American ruling class. We should understand that that this type of struggle is necessary. Electoral politics is a necessary level of struggle. But in understanding this, we have to understand also that revolutionary armed struggle is a necessary ingredient in bringing about unity. It's a necessary ingredient in waging struggle against the enemy. I mean, Newark, New Jersey, Gary, Indiana, and countless other cities throughout the country have shown that electoral politics, unless it prepares us for revolutionary struggle, can never change the capitalist organization of forces in a given urban area, in a given region. That these capitalistic forces, these various corporations, these various money institutions that control the economy of the state are not subjected to control by a mayor. Newark is a classic example. Black people are suffering in Newark just as bad as they suffered under Adonisio, or whoever that dog was over there. And it's not because the black bourgeoisie mayor of Newark has increased his exploitation of black people. It's because he is powerless to change the economical groupings within the state that determine how he has to carry out his daily business. So we shouldn't view the elections of mayors in any large urban city, in any city in the country, unless it's a small, very rural context, where the mayor can exert some type of economical control of economical forces there in that area. But in large urban centers such as L.A., such as New York, such as Detroit, the election of a black mayor will not change the plight of black people. The only thing that would change the plight of black people is the dismantling of the capitalist infrastructure, the dismantling of capitalist relations in this country. And this means revolutionary struggle. And this means we have to prepare on all levels towards the eventuality of waging armed warfare against the ruling class.